Well, it's a pleasure to be here at APHA this year. As Maureen mentioned, I'm at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where I'm an associate professor in the Department of Environmental Health Sciences with a joint appointment in Health Policy and Management. I'd like to acknowledge and thank my co-authors for this presentation, Dr. Lainey Rudko, Dr. Judith Matrani-Reiser, and Dr. Guy Cole. This is in connection with an NSF-funded grant that's looking at a concept or a tool called the Haddon Matrix and its relevance to hospital disaster planning. This is a photo of Grace Children's Hospital in Haiti following the earthquake a couple of years ago. And more we're seeing the critical importance of having a systematic approach to hospital disaster planning across the all hazards continuum, ranging from Hurricane Katrina to Hurricane Sandy, where hospitals in New York City had to be evacuated in a couple of instances. We have seen tornado in Tuscaloosa, Alabama that affected the medical center. So as we're getting a variety of increasing frequency and severity of public health threats, including seismic activities, which I'm going to focus on today, we really need to think of a systematic approach to hospital disaster planning. And that tool that I'm going to describe is called the Haddon Matrix. I have no disclosures. Here's just briefly the purpose of this presentation. Basically, the Haddon Matrix is a public health tool. And one of the things I'd like to see more of is public health tools integrated into disaster management planning. Those are two different disciplines, but they really need to be melded together. That's my personal mission, and I'll go on record as saying that. One of the concepts here is that the Haddon Matrix is a public health tool that hopefully will become apparent, has direct relevance to disaster planning, not just for hospitals, which we're talking about today, but in general. And importantly, the Haddon Matrix integrates a variety of different disciplines that are relevant to hospital disaster planning, including behavioral sciences, policy and law, and engineering. So we need to bring engineers to the table in terms of public health integration of disaster planning generally and for hospitals specifically. What is the Haddon Matrix? This is a tool that's actually about five decades old. This is Dr. William Haddon. And he was an MD, MPH, with a background in injury prevention epidemiology. And the tool that I'm going to share with you is an injury epidemiology-informed tool. The origins of this tool emerged in the late 1960s when Dr. Haddon, who was the first director of the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, was faced with a challenge of how do we deal with increasing highway traffic mortality in a systematic way? And he really came up with a very elegant solution by identifying or using a model that would identify the factors that influence injury and the various phases at which those factors would take effect. And that's the model that I'm going to share with you today. It's gone through several iterations, but the model that's very simple but yet very powerful that I'm going to present today was finalized in the early 1980s. This is what it looks like. It has three rows and four columns. The rows reflect phases, so pre-event, and I'm going to walk through this as a simple example. There's pre-event before the disaster or before the injury-causing event, whatever that may be, the event phase itself, and post-event, after the injury-causing event. Let me just briefly walk you through this simplified but very, I think, straightforward, hopefully, example, using a pedestrian injury approach, or pedestrian injury scenario. So let's think about it, someone walking across the street and getting struck by a vehicle. Well, before that person gets struck by a vehicle, what are the factors before the moment of impact that might be relevant? So William Haddon actually considered four different factors that I'm going to talk about briefly here. In his matrix, you'll see human factors, okay? So before the moment of impact, an intoxicated pedestrian, right, that would place one at greater risk, even before the moment of impact, of subsequently getting hit by a car at an intersection. Agent or vehicle, what is the injury-causing agent? In this case, it could be a speeding vehicle. Again, this is just a partial list, but just illustrative. Physical environment, you see the third column there. Again, we're in the pre-event row. Before the moment of impact, an intersection with poor lighting, again, sets the stage for a potential pedestrian injury. And the fourth column is what William Haddon called the sociocultural environment. And that includes, for example, laws and policies. So if there's a low rate of enforcement of yield laws, I mean, we've all been in jurisdictions where the speed limit is kind of just a number and it's optional, and others where it's more strictly enforced. So how strictly enforced are those yield laws in this case? So that's before the moment of impact. So you're seeing how even before the injury-causing event, we're parceling out the various factors that lead to injury. What about the moment of impact? That's the second row, the event row. So human factors, first column under event, on the event row, for example, osteoporosis in an elderly pedestrian, someone who's got more brittle bones, more susceptible to injury from the impact itself. The front end profile of the vehicle, of the car, is an agent or vehicle factor that has direct relevance at the moment of impact or the event. The third column is road surface characteristics, so slippery roads, for example, or potholes. That is a physical environmental factor. And then the fourth column is speed limits. So what are the laws in the jurisdiction where this injury event is occurring? Let's go down to the third row, the final row here, again, just for illustration. So post-event, after the person has been struck by the vehicle, after the injury-causing event, the first column, human factors, an elderly pedestrian who may have slower time to recover or more difficult recovery process. Agent or vehicle, what about the crash investigation with vehicle inspection? Okay, again, post-event, third column, physical environment. What's the nearest, where is the nearest trauma care facility? That's actually relevant after the moment of impact. And then finally, the sociocultural environment. What is the system for regionalized trauma care? So basically, this allows a divide and conquer approach to dealing with what is a very complex event. And as I'll show you, you can highlight elements that are of greatest feasibility and return on investment in terms of prevention and intervention with these respective cells for any kind of scenario. I'm going to focus on hospital and disasters today. Okay. So there are the beauty of this model, there's no such thing as a perfect model, but this is a pretty excellent model. And it's been published on in a variety of contexts, but more recently, our colleagues and I have looked at disaster preparedness and response using this model. So there are a variety of relevant inputs, law, policy, and regulation, medicine, even from the example I just gave a moment ago, medical aspects, osteoporosis and trauma care access, engineering, which I'm going to talk about. This has never really been used by engineers before. So this is where we can bridge disaster management and engineering with public health, really in a novel and powerful way, as I'll talk about. Behavioral science, operational environment, these are all relevant inputs. Here are relevant outputs to the Haddon matrix. So it allows, once it's implemented, and I'll talk about how you would implement it, it allows for decision support, it gives opportunities for innovation and interdisciplinary collaboration, conceptual organization in a very systematic fashion, and integration of different disciplines. In the case I'm describing here, law and policy, engineering, as well as behavioral science. So how is this relevant to the hospital planner? Very briefly, it's efficient, it's systematic, it addresses different phases of the disaster life cycle, before, during, and after the event. Even William Haddon realized this back in 1960. He talked about its relevance to a polio outbreak. So even though this began with a focus on automotive safety and injury, even William Haddon himself realized its broader implications. And more recently, that has been applied to disaster research. Each cell of the matrix is a locus for identifying strategies. And as I'll talk about, this is a very useful brainstorming tool. So you can get different, you can and should have different people with different types of expertise in the room lending their input to populate these various cells. And it helps parcel out a very complex scenario such as hospital evacuation into more manageable segments for identifying intervention. Okay. And it's scalable. So this can be used at the federal, state, local, institutional level, and even at the international level. So that's another value add. A couple of quick caveats. So this system or this tool is most effective when you fill in all the cells before the event. You don't wait for the event to hit and then say, okay, let's scribble this in for the first time. You can modify. This is not a static document, okay? But you should have something in place to begin with based on anticipated completion of the cells, based on what you would anticipate, and you can always modify it. So that's what we're talking about here with evolving the cells based on the event. This is, I have with permission, the hospital threat assessment matrix from Johns Hopkins Hospital. And basically, this is a very common tool that hospital disaster planners use all the time. You'll see on the y-axis is probability of occurrence, okay? So ranging from low to the lower left-hand corner to high. On the x-axis, you see the magnitude of medical or business operations impact. So this relates to continuity of operations consideration. So anything that's in the northeast corner is a bad place or bad thing to in this context, right? Because that means it's high probability with high impact. Okay. Now, who would have thought that Ebola would have been on this list? So we can't just assume that just because something is not in the northeast quadrant of this, that it's not something that we need to rigorously prepare for. So anyway, highlighted on this slide, I'm including three things that we've looked at in prior research, looking at pandemic flu scenarios, a dirty bomb event, and currently with this NSF grant looking at earthquakes. I'm going to just very briefly, this is all available online, but this is from a manuscript that my colleagues and I published a few years ago, looking at pandemic flu. At that time we were focusing on H5N1. But the idea here is that once you've populated the cells of the matrix, you can highlight, use a highlighter or boldface, those items that you think are most feasibly addressed by public health. Obviously, in public health, we have limited resources. The same is true for disaster management. So we need the biggest return on investment possible. So this allows for a very thought out, careful identification of what are the most feasible interventions, both financially and operationally. A dirty bomb event is an event that has not occurred, but it's actually has been on the U.S. list of national planning scenarios as a top 15 level of concern in terms of possible scenarios. Again, this is covered in a manuscript, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but one of the things we've seen with Ebola and other current and emergent threats is the importance of risk communication, right? So you'll see that's a human factor, and under the human column, this is post-event. Okay, I'm just giving you a snapshot of this. I'm not going through the whole Haddon matrix. This is like looking at a picture through a keyhole. I'm just showing you the last row, the post-event row. Okay, so I've highlighted things that my colleagues and I think are remediable or addressable by public health intervention. So how do we tie this all together in the couple minutes I have remaining? I want to show how this integrates multiple different fields. So this is a Haddon matrix basically presentation of an earthquake scenario for hospitals. And let's look at the human factors. So I'm not going to read all of these. I'm just going to give you illustrative examples. So the first row is pre-event. Personal and family preparedness, right? Rates of personal and family preparedness are abysmal in poll after poll, unfortunately. And unfortunately, the data suggests that it's not much better in healthcare workers and public health workers. So this is a critical issue. And we also have to think about preparedness exercises. So we can learn a lot of lessons from the Ebola experience where hospitals who had done a lot of exercising on this really have become the go-to hospitals. I'm not telling tales out of school, it's just the fact. And so hospitals that have done these kinds of exercises, at least anecdotally, our evidence suggests that they're better prepared. So that's the pre-event phase for the human factors. The agent, proximity to fault lines. So the New Madrid fault line, which you may be familiar with, is not that far from here. It's actually more near St. Louis area. That's one of the most concerning fault lines in the country. A lot of people don't realize that. The longer a fault line goes without seismic activity, the more dangerous that becomes. Physical environment. So this is engineering, okay? And sociocultural environment includes things like memoranda of understanding, zoning and building codes. Again, this will all be in the PowerPoint for your reviews, but I'm just highlighting the key things. What happens at the moment of impact or at the moment of the earthquake? So human factors, fulfillment of role-specific expectations among healthcare workers, peri-event protective behaviors. Very briefly, I live in Baltimore, and we had what we call a hurricane, where there's Hurricane Irene coupled with an earthquake, literally simultaneously. And I'm just wrapping up. So we could tell who was from the West Coast and who was not based on the protective behaviors that people took. So people who ran out of the building under cornices were probably not familiar with earthquake response. So just very briefly, there are other factors. The agent factors are the least modifiable, but look at the physical environmental factors, seismic retrofits. A building fuse is basically a sheet of steel that becomes a lightning rod, if you will, for an earthquake. All the energy goes to that building fuse, which gets damaged, but the rest of the building is intact. So finally, one of the things, and this will set the stage for my colleague Nicole Arrett's presentation coming up, this is post-event. What are the human factors in terms of healthcare and public health workers' perceptions and sense of efficacy toward engaging in disaster recovery activities? So we're doing a study with CDC, and Nicole's a very active member of that team and is going to be presenting on this, that's looking at disaster recovery activities. So I'm not going to steal her thunder, but I'm just mentioning that. Finally, physical environment. I've left out the agent for purposes of efficiency, but here are engineering factors under physical environment, and then sociocultural environment relates to law and policy. So in conclusion, the Haddon matrix really reflects a public health model of the epidemiologic triad of host, agent, and environment, in this case, physical and sociocultural environment. We can't neglect the post-event phase. That includes disaster recovery. The cells of the matrix have to be adapted as the event evolves, but they should be filled in before the event. Right, so it's not a static document. And it's a very efficient, multidisciplinary, flexible planning model. And thank you for your time. And here's my contact information. Thank you.